Hi, everybody. This is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast He Stutters, She Asks Him, which is the series of conversations with men who stutter. You can find that on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at www.stutterrockstar.com, and the episodes are also freely available on iTunes. Today I have the opportunity and privilege to speak with somebody from down under again, somebody from Australia. So I'd like to say hello to Jeff. Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Good morning, Pam. Morning my time, but evening your time, no doubt.
Yes. I'm really happy to have you join us and to give people an opportunity to listen to parts of your story. To get us started, could you introduce yourself and let us know who you are and where you're from and what you do to keep yourself busy?
Yes, certainly, Pam. My name is Jeff Johnston. I live in a little town called Strathalbyn. Population of about 7,000 people. About 3/4 of an hour drive away from Adelaide, which is the capital of South Australia. People look at the map and see the River Murray, the biggest river in Australia. Strathalbyn is near where the river runs out to sea. I've just moved here, in fact, 3 weeks ago, so I'm busily unpacking. I'm 66 years of age. I've been stuttering since I was about 3. My speech these days is pretty good, very good, I would say. For a job, I was an IT consultant, but I gave that up about 10 years ago to be the regional director of the Maguire program, which is a treatment program for people who stutter. It's an international program. And Pam, that keeps me pretty busy.
What drew you into that? What made you leave the IT field to go into professional speech work?
Well, Pam, after many years of trying various therapies, fluency shaping, it's called smooth speech here in Australia, and all of those treatments had a short-term effect, a benefit, if you like, but nothing was long-term. I tried the Maguire program, and it really gelled with me. It was holistic, really helped me such a lot, and it gave me this real passion to help other people who stuttered. And you know the old saying, if you find a job you love and you have a passion for, you'll never work another day in your life. And I'm fortunate that I've found this job. I really enjoy it. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's very few people, I think, that are actually lucky enough to be paid for what they're passionate about. So when you have that opportunity to do that, you certainly need to seize that.
Oh, look, you're quite right. And I have maybe 60 to 70 people a year go through the program here. And some of the stories, these success stories, are really inspirational. And I love seeing the changes in people. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking so much about fluency here, but quality of life changes and saying what they want to say, when they want to say it, without fear and anxiety. It's very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that you yourself had gone through the program after having tried the traditional fluency shaping, which is found in Australia. So what was the difference? What worked for you?
I think, Pam, the main difference is back in those days, and I must say it's starting to change now, but treatment for stuttering was essentially about speech. And I know there's so much more involved in stuttering than simply speech. I would say that speech and a technique is maybe less than 20% of the story. The other 80% is the fear and anxiety, self-limiting beliefs, all of those things that are so important to be addressed for long-term success. And it was the first program that I found that approached stuttering not so much as a problem with speech, but more a problem with the experience of communicating to people. So I had to change how I saw myself fitting into and relating to people and the world around me. And I think that was probably the key.
Had you felt limited by your own speech? I mean, did you experience those things that you just mentioned, fear and anxiety, self-limiting beliefs?
Yes, Pam, I had a lifetime of that. It really didn't stop me from doing anything that I wanted to do, but it was so hard. Life was so hard. I held a management role in the South Australian government, and I can recall coming home from work every day with a tension headache, just stuttering severely, and my stuttering was quite overt. Not only did I stutter on every word, often I stuttered on every syllable of every word, and just the effort in trying. And for most of my life, Pam, I never attempted to say any words of more than two syllables because I simply couldn't. And interesting, still today, I come to use a word and I haven't said it before in my life and I don't know how to say it. And it's really interesting. I call friends and I say, how do you say this word? So it's been quite an amazing journey for me.
It sounds like you're very comfortable and in control of your speech as we speak. Has that been the key for you in what you've found with the McGuire approach, the level of comfort and control that you have?
I think so, Pam, and as far as I'm concerned, there's a direct link between self-esteem, self-confidence, and fluency. And I've had a lot of experience with radio and television interviews, so this is a situation in which I feel very comfortable. I certainly don't classify myself as recovered. There are still situations that I really need to change gears, if you like, and drop back and use exaggerated technique, like I'm demonstrating now, with some voluntary stuttering, just to reduce the fear. So it's about phrasing and pausing, using a costal breath. And if I have a rule, if I go into a speaking situation and I'm afraid I might stutter, that's exactly what I have to do, but under my control, not out of control. So voluntary stuttering is a very strong and powerful tool.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the situations, even now, after having gained that control of your speech, what are some of the situations which still might cause you some fear of stuttering?
It's interesting. One of my most challenging situations, Pam, is talking to my 92-year-old mum. Because deep down in my subconscious mind, I still have this belief, perhaps, that for her to love me or like me, I need to speak properly without stuttering. And of course, I know intellectually that Mum loves me, but I seem to regress back into a 3-4-year-old trying to get Mum's approval. So whenever I see my mother, I start off the conversation 5 to 8 words per breath, with perhaps some voluntary stuttering for the first sentence or two, and then I'm okay, then I'm right. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting, these childhood beliefs are still there just below the surface, and there can be a situation, any one of our, say, 7 senses can trigger an automatic response from the past. So that's why I say I still need to be a little proactive instead of reactive, and be aware of those situations that may cause me stress. Maybe talking to people in authority, I need to just change gears, make sure I have control. I liken it, if you like, to a truck driving up a hill. Starts to struggle a little bit, you change down to give it more power, reach the top of the hill, over the hill, you can change down or change up and away you go. So for a person of my age, just need to be aware of all of those videos in the mind, if you like, of past experiences. We find that young ones, 12, 13, 14-year-olds, have fewer negative experiences to cancel or dissolve, if you like. So I'm happy to report that we're getting a lot of adolescents on the program these days.
Mm.
Find we can help them very quickly.
Mm-hmm. That certainly makes sense, because the younger that you are, the less fear that you've built up about stuttering in general, and the comments that you made about your mother certainly remind me of my own childhood fears, because I always felt that my father was very disapproving, and in fact was ashamed of me because of stuttering. So because of that belief, and it was more than a belief, I mean, he actually yelled and screamed at me to stop talking like that. Those early reactions that he had to me is what basically drove me to be covert for a number of years. Yes. Which was extremely difficult, because it's just as challenging to try to hide your stutter as it is exhausting to be overt about it. So I'm sure you can relate to that as well.
Yes. In a way, I think, Pam, covert stutterers have a harder job dealing with their stuttering, because one of the most destructive things, I believe, is avoidance. If we avoid word sounds and situations, that really does affect our self-esteem and self-confidence. So one of the philosophies, if you like, about the Maguire program is total non-avoidance. Really just need to get out there and embrace every speaking situation. And you don't have to be a perfect speaker. It's all about being an eloquent speaker. We call it the sport of speaking. So we approach it as we would any sport. To get good at any sport, like, for example, I play tennis, to make a really good effort on a Saturday playing a match, I need to practice. I need to pay attention to my technique, and I need to challenge myself in matches. So the sport of speaking, we use the same approach, if you like, on the Maguire program.
Mm-hmm. Well, how is it that you're able to encourage people that, you know, have really been caught up in the in the negativity and the feelings of inadequacy and the poor self-esteem with their stuttering, how is it that you get them to embrace going out there and stuttering publicly and even doing that voluntary stuttering? What is it that helps propel the person to be able to want to do that?
It's very, very difficult, Pam, to get someone who's spent a lifetime trying not to stutter to stutter voluntarily. Very difficult. And I think the answer to your question, they need to see the evidence. People come on our courses, maybe the first day. They have a history of stuttering. They possibly have a history of unsuccessful treatment by the speech pathology profession. In fact, 92% of our new students have been treated, some for 20, 30 years, by the speech pathology profession. And for whatever reason, it's been unsuccessful. So our task on the first day or two is to start to break down those limiting beliefs, those doubts about anything in the world can help them. So they need to see the evidence. They need to see our coaches, our instructors. They need to hear success stories about what people who stutter are doing now. And that gives them a bit of faith and hope that there is something that can help them. So it's all about seeing the evidence. And over 4 days, by the end of the 4 days, they're completely fluent. In fact, after 2 days, they're completely fluent. But there's no miracle 4-day course for stuttering. There's no miracle 4-day cure. The end of the 4 days is just the start of their recovery process, Pam. So improving your speech and overcoming your stuttering, if you like, happens in the real world. It doesn't happen during a sheltered environment of a 4-day intensive course. So we provide the coaching and ongoing support that will help them and encourage them along the way, along the journey, if you like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned that the real work happens in the real world, because I've heard from so many people that participate in other types of therapy approaches that the most difficult piece, particularly with fluency shaping, is the transfer from the quote unquote clinic room setting to the real world, and that people find it difficult, if not impossible, to transfer that fluency. So it's interesting that you mention that in that context. So you keep up with graduates?
Yes, we do. We, as part of their membership of the program, they're assigned a coach. Most of these coaches are volunteers, and they attend support groups, refresher days, 4-day intensive refreshers, and it's an ongoing process. We do have a number, maybe 10% of students who come along looking for the magic pill. And, of course, there's no magic pill. And those people leave the course and they don't practice their breathing. They don't expand their comfort zone. They don't stay connected with the program. And after maybe 2-3 months, they relapse and they wander off looking for the next magic solution. And, of course, there's none. Unfortunately, for people who stutter, the elevator's out of order. We have to use the stairs. There's nothing to replace bravery and hard work and persistence if you want to be successful in this journey.
Now, you mentioned something that struck a chord with me. You indicated that about 10% of the people that take the McGuire course relapse. And you mentioned that some of that is due to perhaps not practicing their breathing. Isn't there the risk of a person feeling like they've failed in some way if they haven't practiced their breathing or practiced one of the other techniques? It sounds like a person could go right back to feeling like a failure, perhaps similar to other approaches that they've tried.
We certainly follow these people up, Pam, and we're always there for them. And a reason for their relapse may not be that they haven't practiced their breathing or their technique. Perhaps the reason is they suffer from a high level of social anxiety disorder, for example. So what we'd do in that situation is maybe refer them to a trained psychologist to do some CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. Mm-hmm. At the start of every course, we do a social anxiety disorder questionnaire called the SPIN survey that does give us a feel right up front about those people who suffer from a high level of social anxiety. In fact, I would even say that social anxiety is one of the major causes of relapse, because the fear of stuttering and all of those fears and anxieties in social situations, maybe they're so big and so strong that no amount of breathing or technique is going to be successful for those kinds of people. So they may need additional professional help outside of the program to deal with their social anxiety disorder. The McGuire program basically uses the process of desensitization to reduce that fear and anxiety. So we make a point of going out and embracing speaking situations in which we'd previously avoid or be unsuccessful. And using the breathing and the speaking technique, most people can be successful in those speaking situations. So their perceptions and their beliefs start to change, and the fear and anxiety in those situations reduces. It's akin, if you like, going to the dentist. If you're afraid of going to the dentist, if you go a number of times and the dentist doesn't hurt you, that fear and anxiety starts to reduce. But for people with chronic social anxiety disorder, that process of desensitization may not work as effectively. We never ever throw in the towel on anyone, Pam. We're always there to follow up, to encourage, and to support. And look, it's horses for courses, I think. The McGuire program doesn't suit everyone. It's an assertive program. We learn to speak assertively. We treat it as a sport. We train hard. And for some people, that program and that type of commitment and application really doesn't suit their personality, maybe. So, yes, there are a percentage of people who aren't successful with the program, but we're always there to help them and support them.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like that's one of the basic premises behind the program's success, the help and the support and the coaching that comes after the completion. Am I right?
Yes, you're right, Pam. And self-help groups are so important. Like over in the States, I guess you have the NSA, is that right? Is that a self-help group for people who stutter? Here in Australia, we have the Australian Speakeasy Association, in which I'm involved as well. But The Maguire program, it's an international program, so we have a very large self-help network.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very effective. Speech pathologists and professionals really can't provide that same level of ongoing help and support. For example, I'll give you an example. I had one of my graduates, he had to give a series of marketing presentations at a trade show in front of a couple hundred people. So he was a little bit apprehensive about doing this. So I asked him to ring me on his mobile phone and wear his Bluetooth device while he's giving the presentation.
Hmm.
And I was able to coach him real time as he was giving the presentation, asked him to pause more, throw in a few voluntary stutters just to reduce the fear. He was speeding up too much. And then for the second one, I tuned in and made no comment. Third one, he said, look, Jeff, I'll be right now. I don't need you anymore for these presentations.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd built up his confidence. So that's the kind of support that's available. And speech pathologists just simply, they're very busy people. They can't afford, well, they can't afford the time. And very often the client can't afford the fees either for that kind of support.
Mm-hmm. What do you believe that speech-language pathologists believe about the Maguire program? Do you ever get any individuals referred to Maguire from SLPs?
Yes, we do here in Australia, and I notice it's increasing. But it's coming from the speech pathologists who work in hospitals, community centres. They don't specialise in stuttering.
Aye.
They're very effective in all sorts of areas, but they find that they can no longer help a client with his or her stuttering, so they refer them to the Maguire program. Those speech pathologists here in Australia who specialise in treating stuttering or research stuttering don't give the Maguire program a lot of credence. Their comment is, you're not an evidence-based program.
Ah.
Well, we are, but our evidence is a little bit different to their evidence. For example, I have three graduates here in Australia who are now professional speakers and trainers. Now, is that evidence that the program has been effective? I certainly think so. And we have people who are leaving the assembly line, screwing nuts onto bolts, and they're at university training to be doctors or lawyers. Is that evidence? Certainly is evidence. But their attitude is softening towards the program because I think they're seeing the evidence. One of our graduates has just won Australia's Got Talent about a month or so ago. Now, he came to the Melbourne course back in March and gained so much confidence from that that he went through and he won, I think it was $250,000, and he won the whole competition. So, again, that is evidence. If we had the money and resources, we could do proper scientific studies and research and provide that evidence. But we don't have the money, we don't have the time to do that research. So I don't worry too much about that, Pam, because it diverts my attention from what I need to do and what I enjoy doing. So I don't be distracted from that negative comment. I just focus on helping people who stutter.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, that seems to be what's most important to you, because I'm definitely hearing that you get a great deal of personal satisfaction from your work.
I do, Pam, and I spent my working life involved in politics, office politics, and I have no wish to become involved in that kind of rubbish anymore. So I just do what I enjoy doing, and I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't think it was helping people.
Mm-hmm. Now, the young man that was doing the marketing presentations that you coached him through, by the third one that he had to do, when he said, "I don't need you anymore," how did that make you feel?
Oh, I felt so joyful, so elated, and very, very pleased for him. And it's the kind of thing, though, I spoke about being afraid of the dentist. Well, you reduce that fear, but unless you go back and revisit the dentist frequently, that old fear might return. So it's really important for that young man to seek out opportunities to do more marketing presentations and keep doing them to make sure the fear of that situation is well and truly overkill. So you need to come back and keep doing that. And most of our graduates are joining Toastmasters, for example, which is a public speaking club. Really important that they keep doing things that used to scare them and challenge them, because that'll result in a change in long-term belief about their capabilities. And it's a matter of getting rid of all those self-limiting beliefs. And, well, it's no short-term thing, Pam. I've been involved in this program for, 10, 12 years, whatever, and I'm still on the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm enjoying it, though, enjoying every minute of it.
Mm-hmm. How do people within McGuire find out about Toastmasters?
We talk about it on courses. All coaches recommend it. A lot of the coaches are members, and they take their new student along to join and encourage them to do so. Many don't because of time limitations, but we encourage them to be president of their local tennis club or whatever activity to increase their speaking time. Rob Lucas, you mentioned earlier, he's now involved in amateur theatre.
Mm-hmm.
So Toastmasters became a bit ho-hum to Rob. There was no fear there. So he decided, how can I increase my fear? So he went out and he joined an amateur dramatic society, and he's rehearsing currently for his third play. So I have a little saying, if you're not scaring the pants off yourself at least once a week, you need to do something about it.
that makes a lot of sense, and I'm definitely looking forward to speaking with Rob as well, because I think, acting and putting yourself on a stage really creates an opportunity for you to be exposed and vulnerable, and if you can weather that, then you've really made great strides on the journey that you've just spoken about.
Yeah, look, that's a very wise comment, Pam, and that really is the key to it. Be prepared not to worry about the judgment of others, if you like. And that really is one of the root causes of stuttering behavior. We're worried about the judgment of others. What will people think of us if we stutter or block? And really, what other people think of us is really none of our business. And by thinking they're judging us, well, aren't we judging them? So we try and talk about getting rid of all judgment and accepting that even if you stutter a bit or block a bit, people really don't care. They think, oh, this guy stutters like King George in that movie, The King's Speech. And people reflect back to us what we push out, if you like. If we're looking at the ground, no eye contact, feeling uncomfortable, feeling embarrassed, they pick that up subconsciously and they go away and think, well, I didn't enjoy that much. I won't speak to that person again. But even if we're stuttering a bit, if we've got eye contact, if we have a smile on our face, they feel comfortable talking to us and they'll enjoy the conversation far more. So eye contact is a very important part of the Maguire program. People who stutter, when they anticipate a block or they're in a block, they'll normally look away. And really, if you've got a long history of doing that, looking away becomes a mind-body trigger for the block to actually happen. So on the program, we re-emphasize maintaining appropriate eye contact. And that's a very confident thing to do, showing respect for the listener. I ask you, would you buy a used car from a salesman who couldn't look you in the eye? So eye contact is a really important hint, if you like, maybe a tool to help people who are listening to this work on your eye contact and stop putting forward the image of someone who is uncomfortable, embarrassed, all of those things. And your listener will enjoy the conversation far more.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the person who stutters has some responsibility to educate their listener, or, if you will, their communication partner? Is it up to us to do that?
That's entirely up to the person, Pam. For example, I believe I do, and that's part of my role to educate the public about stuttering, but I wouldn't say specifically that that's a responsibility for everyone. It depends on the person, but you'll make your communication with that person far easier if you make what we call a disclosure. Prime example, job interview. If you go into a job interview, which is high up on the list of difficult situations for people who stutter, make a disclosure right up front. Before we start, I'd just like to say that I have a stutter. So please be patient if I take my time in answering your questions. And my stutter is probably more pronounced during a job interview. So you can see I've used some voluntary stuttering there that has reduced the fear, but I've also let them know that I have a stutter straight away that tells the panel a number of things about you: honesty, integrity, bravery. And if you're having treatment for your stutter, tell them about that as well. Takes responsibility for his or her own improvement. So, hey, you've almost got the job already, haven't you?
Yes, definitely when you describe it like that. But there's still an awful lot of people out there that just are not at that point on their journey, right? Still have fears to even involve themselves in some type of approach that will make stuttering easier for them, I think.
I think you're right, Pam, and I have a bit of a saying that to have treatment and to be successful, whatever you define success as, in that treatment, you really do have a compelling reason to change. Now, it's almost the case your stuttering has to have hurt you enough for you to put in the bravery, the work, the persistence at whatever treatment you choose to have. You have to have a compelling reason to change. And it's hard to change, Pam, because we're comfortable where we are, and any kind of change requires risk. the old saying, the tortoise can't move forward until it sticks out its neck, is very true here, that if you want to improve with your speech, you need to get help. You need to be supported by a self-help group, and you need to be brave and have a compelling reason to change. And if you have that, you can move forward. You really can. And for people out there listening to this, if you're stuck in the cycle of fear and anxiety and stuttering, try and think about what your compelling reason is to change. Find an effective treatment in your area and go for it. Give it 100% bravery, effort, and improvement will be made over a period of time. The challenge is to maintain that improvement. And that's where the self-help groups come in. They're very, very important. But success can be gained. I would love speech pathologists to spend some of their research money going out talking to people who have recovered from stuttering. And I know many people on and off the program who no longer stutter. Their stuttering doesn't control their life anymore. An example here in Adelaide, where I live, Wendy O'Hagan, one of the worst overt stutterers I've ever heard in my life, did the program at age 63. She's now a marriage celebrant, making her living out of speaking. And there's something in common between all of these successful people. They've just gone out and taken every opportunity to speak, to challenge their feared situations, and they've been successful.
Well, you're doing really important work, and I can tell that you love it. I can hear it in your voice, and I feel confident that your story and what you've shared here is going to inspire people that have listened. So thank you so much for joining us and for sharing the life's work and your passion with us.
Oh, look, that's my pleasure, Pam, and I've loved it. And the time has gone so quickly.
It sure has. It always does.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thanks for the opportunity, Pam. I've really enjoyed it and lovely to talk to you.
Yes, I have as well. And keep up the great work. You're certainly touching lives.
Thank you, Pam.
And this has been He Stutters, She Asks Him.